Hello, everyone. Welcome to CoreCast. I'm your host, Tim.
And I'm Mikey.
This is Sahil. Welcome, everybody, to a brand new, exciting episode of CoreCast. If you haven't already, do join our Discord channel so you can ask questions there. And if you're watching this on YouTube, where we do this every Tuesday, 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, ask us questions during the episode, and we'll get to them during that time. So without further ado, Tim and Mikey, last time we talked about what we would consider as a contender for, like, the true quote-unquote God's particle, as contentious of a name that was, which was the inflaton. And for those of you who haven't seen the episode, check out our previous episode to hear more details about that. We were discussing how, like, this actually supersedes the Higgs in terms of its, like, place in the universe. Now, if the Higgs is not the God's particle, where does that leave the Higgs? Mikey, I know I'm just going to throw it off to you. What's the deal with the Higgs? What's going on?
I mean, I don't think the Higgs is a bad contender for the name God's particle. It'd be like top three for sure. But yeah, I mean, when we think of God's particle, we think of like something that's responsible for creation. And that's firmly not what the Higgs is. In fact, the Higgs didn't even exist in the universe until quite a bit into the life of the universe, which is like, what, like a millionth of a second or something. But yeah, so the Higgs, it's responsible for structure in the universe, but it's not responsible for, just the creation of the universe itself. And so that's why, Tim and I feel that it's not quite appropriate name for it to call it the God's particle. We know the concept of like a keystone species. There was that like story about like Yellowstone National Park, and then they brought the wolves back to Yellowstone National Park, and then the wolves started eating like the rabbits, so the grass grew more, and then it gave rise to like a huge amount of like natural diversity, biodiversity. And so that's actually like a much more appropriate analogy for what the Higgs does, right? So the Higgs didn't create the landscape, but it's responsible for structure and beauty arising within that landscape.
So my question for you is, like, with the keystone species, is that a species that gives rise to diversity? Is that the analogy?
Kind of. It's kind of like one small, seemingly insignificant ingredient that when you put it in, it causes a chain reaction, generates a huge amount of biodiversity relative to what you would think.
I would say that if the Higgs wasn't there, there will be some stuff in the universe, but just not as interesting or have complex interactions happening as if the Higgs was around. So I think we feel that the keystone particle is probably a more aptly named.
Is it true to say that if the Higgs didn't exist, then the universe would just be one big black hole?
No, I think it's not quite there. It's not quite there. When we talk about the Higgs particle, we don't literally refer to the particle itself. I think this is more like a colloquially speaking. As particle physicists, we're really more interested in the Higgs field and not the particle. The particle is kind of like a wiggling of the field. But of course, people are more familiar with the name particles, and that's why we're referring we're using that the same lingo, where you use the Higgs particle, refer to the concept of the Higgs itself. We have the Higgs field and the associated Higgs particle. But what it does is, the only time when it starts doing interesting things, it's kind of later in the creation story. So I think it's fair to say that even the Higgs was always there, but up until the point the Higgs gets activated, like the Higgs field is not really that necessary. I think that's fair. And even if the Higgs didn't activate it the way it is, I don't think it would just be the universe will be a wash. There will be still interesting stuff. There will be particles of light, photons. There will be electrons. It wouldn't be totally void of anything, but it would be less interesting for sure.
So, like, you wouldn't have chemistry without the Higgs?
Oh, absolutely not. Right? Like, you would definitely wouldn't have atoms. That for sure.
Okay. So that's what you mean by interesting. You'd probably have, like, quote-unquote fundamental particles, but not bound together.
Yeah, but not necessarily just fundamental particles, right? Like, we can speculate what happens. There might be things, objects like glue balls that we talk about that could exist. It could be, that may have another episode, there will be particles of light, right? There will be gravitons. Is that roughly it? There might be some really light particles floating around. Also, neutrinos, for example. So it wouldn't be totally empty.
But you wouldn't certainly have neutrinos, though, would you? I mean, not in the sense that we understand them today.
I think we should clarify a little bit, right? Like the Higgs field, the part or the particle, is responsible for a few things, but not everything. And obviously, if we take it out, things would change. But do we associate those changes, all those changes, to the Higgs particle or not? I mean, that's a bit of interpretational, but certainly things would change.
So I guess, like, how does the Higgs being here give rise to, like, complicated things such as, like, chemistry and, like, atoms, for instance? How can I
it's fair to say that the Higgs is responsible for why everything is not super massive.
Oh.
Or exactly massless, right? So there's, like, in the universe, we have, like, certain scales, right? Like, certain, like, energy scales. And so there are certain particles like the photons and the gluons, which are forced to be massless, so have absolutely zero mass.
The universe tends to be like an all or nothing machine, right? Like if something had energy, it's got to have a damn lots of energy. If something doesn't have a lot of energy, it would just be like almost no energy. There's rarely these Goldilocks zone. It's like, oh, somewhere in between. Like just look at the things that exist in our everyday lives, right? I got electrons in my thumb, which is way lighter than the proton, and the neutron is somehow comparable, and the interaction strength is not like overwhelmingly large. Like, for example, when I clap my hands, I don't see nuclear fusion going on, like explosions happening all the time, which is what normally what you would expect from like a really typical universe that are really gung-ho about interactions, right? It's either all or nothing. You either get some super crazy, massive nuclear explosions, or like just like really boring, like not very interesting stuff. You don't get something in between. Like the Higgs, it gives you a way to temper those differences, the extremes between the really energetic with the almost like no energy, and it allows you to fill in the gaps. So you have like layers and layers of particles with slightly less energy, one after the other. So it's almost like a ladder of possibilities. So we can have very interesting combinations of them. Like when you have more possibilities, you have more combinations and more interesting things could happen. And ultimately, you know, this is where ultimately this leads to humans in some ways, right? Like,
I think the simplest way to say it is that the Higgs is the reason why there's something in between zero and infinity. So I'm just using like the Planck mass of like effectively infinity. Yeah. But the universe, basically, you know, it can be zero or it can be infinity. But, you know, what's between zero and infinity? There's like three important numbers in math, right? There's zero, infinity, and
is one.
Yeah.
So the Higgs is the one. It's the reason why there's something in between these two things. If there was no Higgs, there would be nothing to kind of like stabilize the place in between. And that's where we live. That's where chemistry lives.
So if I were to give like a cooking analogy to it, could you say that like the Higgs is the reason my oven can go from like anywhere in between like 0 degrees to like wherever, I mean zero, you know, the starting point to like the maximum temperature anywhere in between versus like all or nothing? That's why I can make like really nice dishes.
By the way, except the Higgs doesn't work on a continuum. It's like, I think it's more accurate to say that, well, the more accurate now, shit's getting a little weird now, but like if your oven only had two settings, like zero and thousands, but the thing that you need to cook to make humans just at 100, at just the right temperature, as Tim mentioned, like a kind of a Goldilocks zone kind of thing.
That makes sense. That is, you know, that actually gives a lot of credence to the notion of a keystone particle in this case. What does it mean for like universe to be like all? Is it just like one giant black hole? So it's either like one giant black hole or like close to that versus like everything is just super spread out.
The gods of the universe really is gravity. Gravity sees all. It sees everything, observes everything. So a universe that's all in, basically everything is turning on, means that everything has very strong gravitational interactions. And when that happens, things are going to be like black holes, or if string theory was correct, would just be really energetic, massive strings that are floating around. And these will all have strong gravity everywhere. Like everything would just move around each other through gravity, and all the forces will basically be similar to gravity, right? So that's kind of like a killer of diversity, right? Like everybody's kind of have a similar opinion in some ways, right? roughly speaking. So so that's what a typical universe that goes all in is like. Everything is it like a black hole, basically? You know,
I mean, universes are very violent by nature. I think that's the thing. The universe is the, like, what it wants to do is to shake everything up as much as it possibly can. And the Higgs is what allows it to just shake a little bit, which is just enough. A shaking is what you need to, like, you know, create chemistry
molecules. Is it fair to say it's like a kid, like, going on a super tantrum? Just like, just destroying everything?
Yeah, that's what the universe wants to do. The universe, it's like, you know, it wants to be pure chaos. The Higgs is what allows it to, it's like, I don't know.
It's like a pacifier for the
universe. That's like a pacifier.
Is it like an intuitive way to understand like how it goes about doing it? I understand there's like a lot of technical reasons, but is there like maybe a layperson explanation?
It's a little similar to the inflaton, right? The inflaton has like this ball rolling down the hill analogy. The Higgs kind of also has that. I think
that's true. But I mean, actually, the question that Sahil just asked is the question that the Large Hadron Collider failed to answer, and therefore we may never know the answer to that question. I mean, what Tim's saying about, you know, the ball rolling down the hill, like, that's all true, but like the fact that it rolled down the hill and the bottom of the hill happened to be at exactly the location that it happens to be, like, we may never know the answer to that. It's one of the biggest tragedies in modern particle physics.
Yeah, I guess that answer, it answers the how, it doesn't answer the why.
I was asking how, not why at the moment. Like how do we know it does this? Like, it's my question.
The Higgs in the early universe is very violent. It sits on this hill. It's just some random place on the hill. And as the universe cools down, at some point the Higgs field kind of gets activated and it starts rolling down this hill and eventually settles down at the bottom. The location of that bottom, exactly where that is, kind of fine-tunes for you what the entire properties of the universe.
That's the knob of the oven.
You can think of it as almost like the solar system, right? Like, how come the Earth is hospitable? At some point, rocks were hitting around each other. I mean, I have no clue how planetary science works. But at some point, maybe the rocks were hitting each other. The Earth just happened to settle on some hospitable zone, and that's where we end up. And the Higgs is kind of like that. It's just going crazy. It's throwing a tantrum in the early universe. At some point, it kind of just calms down, settles down, and it just happens so that it settled down in this really Goldilocks zone. This Higgs potential, it's like 245, there's some units, GV, you can go online and search for it. And it just sits there. And then because of that, it calms down, then all these beautiful stuff can form. And at the Large Hadron Collider, we can collide particles to jiggle it just a little bit to create the Higgs boson, which we have measured and proved to exist, and to look at all the other properties of the particles and to confirm that indeed, yeah, there's this, you know, abstract, and in every sense is real, this abstract and real, like, ball, this Higgs field kind of rolling around. We can jiggle it, we can probe it, and we confirm to exist.
I'm still trying to, like, wrap my arms around this. Like, does it do that by interacting with everything? Like, how does Higgs exert such influence? Like, what's so, like, how does it make it so special? Like, why does an electron not be able to do this? And why isn't the Higgs that's able to do this?
I mean, I would say ordinary matter cannot do this because ordinary matter cannot exist everywhere. Like, for example, electrons and protons, these are something we call fermions. It's the most common type of matter that we see. Pretty much everything we see are fermions, except particles of light, which is a little different. But these particles, inherently, maybe it's a little intuitive. There's this intuition that they kind of exist in discrete units, right? Like, you feel your hand here. You can't just have like an ocean of electrons flowing around. I mean, you could have an electron gas, but that would require a lot of energy. So they can't, these matter particles cannot permeate the entire space. For something to have the property of the Higgs field, it has to be everywhere. It has to be like omnipresent. Indeed, the Higgs field is like that. Like, the fact that you can feel your hand, like, the fact that your hand is not moving at the speed of light, it's thanks to the Higgs field. It's slowing it down. Maybe not everything, but the electrons, quarks, the fact that we can feel they move is because you can think of this cosmic molasses, which is not the best analogy, but like every nanosecond or smaller, the particles are kind of chit-chatting and interacting with the Higgs field so that it gets slowed down. It pacifies all the craziness of the universe. so that we get like a peaceful existence.
I want to ask another question about that. Like, I thought like electrons, protons, quarks, all these fields like kind of exist everywhere, and just when you observe them, they're like localized. Because I thought like the quantum nature implies that they're not like they're kind of spread out throughout the universe.
Right. Right. Yeah.
I think it's said like the Higgs is a very special particle. It's the only kind such kind of particle we've ever seen before. Because every particle that we know that makes up, like, you know, electrons, quarks, and stuff, they all have features. You could say they have, like, a face. And those features determine what they're allowed to play with and what they're not allowed to play with. The Higgs is essentially a faceless, featureless particle. So it can play with anybody it wants to play with. And I think it's exactly what you said, Sahil. Like, you know, that allows it to kind of, like, interact with everybody at the same time. So when it gets activated, as Tim says, you know, it kind of like pulls all of the other particles down to this, you know, magic temperature on the oven scale.
Yeah. A requirement for a particle to be able to do this, like tempering, you know, and play nicely with the other particle is this probably that needs to be dialable, right? The Higgs field, you can dial up and down kind of theoretically. But like the electron field, you can't do that. I mean, you could, but if you dial up the electron field, you're just going to pop out a crap ton of electrons. And if you do that for the whole universe, I mean, that's a bad universe, right? You don't want everywhere to be electrons popping out. Like, that would take infinite amount of energy, right? But the Higgs field is not like that. It's kind of like Mikey said, this is like this nice neutral that's kind of like a knob that can move up and down without, you know, creating too much chaos in the universe in such a way that it can settle down somewhere to kind of like anchor in place.
Go back to the oven thing, that like, you know, the electron is like a turkey and quarks are like mashed potatoes. The Higgs is the heat that like cooks it, right? There's like very, very different, like the heat cooks everything. You know, it cooks the turkey, it cooks the mashed potatoes, because it's just like this blob of energy. Whereas the other thing is they have like, you know, more specific structure to them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, you can't throw just a bunch of turkey in the oven. That doesn't do anything. That's fair.
I guess one question that I have is, like, why couldn't photons or gravitons do this? Like, they permeate the universe. Like, they're everywhere.
They have faces.
Yeah, so photons actually have more features than you think.
Hmm.
If you have ever worn sunglasses, photons has kind of like polarization. They have shapes in some sense, right? So if photons would do something like that, I mean, people could come up with theories that does something like that. Mm. If photons were to play a similar role, then the universe would have some kind of preferred directions or shape. Because photons is a shape. If the photon, let's say, freezes in this direction, left, then to the right would look a little different from the left, or the up would look a little different from the down. But we don't see that. So that's not possible. The thing is, we see this featureless dial that we observe in the universe, and that's what makes the Higgs so special. It kind of has this neutral, featureless face that gets dial and kind of, you know, drive all the different properties of everybody else.
I think that's actually a really good way to say it. The Higgs is the only particle that we've ever discovered in the universe that has no shape. It's a shapeless, shouldn't even really exist. I mean, it's just weird to see such a thing. It's like literally meaning someone that doesn't have a face. Like, it's just, there's no shape.
Is there an easy way to explain what a shape means for a particle? Like a geometry of a particle, or like how...
Typically, we mean angular momentum. Like, it's not every particle is spinning at some rate or not spinning. Well, it has... Literally, every particle has a direction,
yeah,
like up, down. But the Higgs is the only one that has no apparent, has no axis of rotation.
Yeah, for ordinary particles, if you look at it from a different orientation, like let's take a light coming at you, you look at the sunglasses, you rotate the sunglasses, you see different properties. And that's true for almost every particle that we see, electrons, protons. An MRI machine uses some of that, right? Like, and that's how they detect, I don't know, molecular behaviors in your body, because the orientation can change and that can allow the MRI to see things, right? But the Higgs, yeah, like you said, it's really strange. It, no matter which way you're looking at it, you can't distinguish it. It looks the same. So it's kind of like a faceless particle.
I think shapeless is the better word, right?
I think it's made.
Yeah, it has no geometry to it.
Well, although we should add that the inflaton is also another such particle, although it has not been confirmed to exist yet. We strongly believe that something like that exists, but unlike the Higgs, this...
Similarly, that what also makes the inflaton so godlike, that, you know, the fact that it has, it's not another particle, hypothetically, that has no shape, is what allows it to play such a deep and diverse role in every the life of every single other particle.
Yeah. Is there anything that the doesn't interact with the Higgs? It's like permeating, but does it touch every part of our lives?
That's the tricky question. The Higgs doesn't necessarily have to interact with everything. So that's why we kind of kick it off the God's particle list. Because not everything really interacts with the Higgs. So unlike gravity.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, so you have to play by some rules.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the Higgs plays well with most of the particles we see. Like Micah, you mentioned neutrinos. I think that's a fair statement. It doesn't mess with neutrinos. I think that's fair. They're not friends.
I mean, there's probably more than one Higgs. They're right. There's probably an infinite number of Higgses. Can't be a God particle.
Well, I don't know about infinite. But I would bet that there are multiple. I mean, in some sense, the inflaton is kind of somewhat similar to the Higgs, but also not quite. But
okay, so I guess one elephant in the room that we didn't really talk about until now, which is, I think, how I knew about the Higgs when I was studying physics was it gives rise to mass. So what's with that? Like, what does the Higgs have to do with mass?
Mass is exactly that temperature.
I mean, mass just kind of roughly tells you the amount of energy an interaction will involve. And it's really just going off Einstein's theory, E equals MC squared. You know, the mass of a particle kind of dictates the kind of parties that it can go to in some sense, if you think of it this way, right? Mm-hmm. It's almost like there's this hierarchy of the particle realm. You know, you got particles that are really light, and they're kind of like a different class of citizens, and maybe particles that are really massive. I don't know.
The mass of a particle is exactly linearly proportional to the strength with which that particle can talk to the Higgs at a party. The more conversations it has with the Higgs, the more massive it is. The less conversations it has with the Higgs, the less massive it is.
Yeah. But I'm saying without the Higgs, then the mass, almost this currency of interaction, could be everywhere, pretty much. You know, it's dictated by gravity, which is pretty much the overarching overlord. And when we were mentioning, the universe kind of likes just things to be super energetic. It's all or nothing, right? Without the Higgs to kind of create this temperament, all the things we see in the real life would either be really close to massless, just flying away at the speed of light, or really massive that we will have no access to. These are like, I don't know, Beverly Hills celebrities that will never reach, right? These are like otherworldly particles. So there will be nothing in between, right? The Higgs is kind of like, it's got just enough oomph, but not like overwhelming amount to kind of bring those scale down. So it gives reasonable masses to particles, not something crazy large and not zero, somewhere in between.
Is this too crazy of an analogy? Imagine a party where you only have two types of people. People that are yelling, and then people that are dead silent. There's only two types of people at this party. The Higgs enters the party, and it says, you, me, you. We're going to have a conversation. I'm going to talk to you this much. I'll talk to you a little less. I'll talk to you a little less. I'll talk to you a little less. And just our group here, we're going to form all of everything that exists in the universe together. And they form a company with some hierarchy. And that's kind of like the story. And then, you know, everyone pull out there yelling and the you know, silent people are selecting silent, but just this select group, the select subset of people at the party, you know, go forth and create everything that we know.
And that's fair. But of course, the mystery is remaining that why do certain things like to talk to the Higgs more than others?
Yeah.
That's a mystery.
Or how did the Higgs get to the party in the first place? Like, where did
it come from? So those are mystery, but these are just mechanisms, right? Like, and we have discovered Higgs boson. We know it exists. That's just how the nature works. You know, there's a Higgs in the party and it you know, welcomes everybody and we have a chit chat and have a nice universe.
No, it doesn't welcome everybody, right? Only, you know, there's a lot of people that it's excluding.
There are some who are not invited to the party that still exist in the universe.
But they're just like yelling and raging and we don't care about them because they're not saying anything that makes sense. Yeah.
So Mikey, if I eat a lot of junk food and like I gain weight, does that mean I interact more with the Higgs?
It means that you have, that it means the number of things in your body that interacts with the Higgs is, your overall interaction with the Higgs is greater. I mean, the interaction of particles that make up Sahil with the Higgs boson has definitely increased.
Right. The per particle interaction rate didn't change.
I see.
Yeah. But of course, the overall, the expectation. So that's fair.
Yeah. No, that's totally fair. So we're almost at time. I want to ask you guys if you want to leave the audience with any parting thoughts before we head out. Tim, you go first.
Yeah, I would say even though we kind of slightly demoted the Higgs particle as the God's particle, I'm hoping that we didn't undersell its importance. The Higgs particle underscored one of the most perplexing theoretical problems in theoretical physics. And no one has the answer. And this is called a hierarchy problem. Like, why is the Higgs the way it is? But still, if you ignore that problem, the Higgs is here, kind of tempers our universe, and our existence has to be thanks to the Higgs. Personally, I just like to take a moment and think about, you know, we live in a pretty darn special universe, especially with the Higgs field floating around. And this is something that keeps you awake at night. Be like, why is this Higgs field here and doing its job? I mean, that's a really perplexing mystery, but also kind of, I don't know, kind of satisfying in a way, is it? Kind of like makes you feel a little special, but maybe not that special.
Yeah, Mikey.
Yeah, but I would just echo exactly what Tim said. Maybe it's just kind of been a different way to say the same thing. The Higgs didn't give rise to everything in the universe. If we have any idea about how that happened, that the credits that would go to the inflaton. But the Higgs is the reason why this stuff became personable, humanable. Is that a word? Humanable. it's really like a particle that's been just absolutely tailored for the existence of complex organisms and life and humans. So. Yeah, I mean, we definitely owe our existence to it. There's no doubt about that. It's not the thing that set the match, that set the spark, that gave rise to this whole thing, but it is the particle responsible for bringing us to where we are today. And so, yeah, like I said, I know top three candidates if you're going to call something the God particle, but yeah. Probably not number one.
I guess maybe one thing that comes to mind, right, for me personally, like I know the Higgs particle, Higgs field, sounds so abstract. To a lot of audience, like, I've never heard of it. I didn't learn this in high school or even in college, probably. But look, for something so fundamentally important to our existence, I think it deserves some respect and like some resource to learn what the hell that's about. And a lot of people sometimes ask us, like, what the hell is the point of particle physics? Well, this is the point. The Higgs exists. We want to study it. And I think hopefully this episode shows the audience that, look, you know, it deserves a little more recognition than it does, like the Higgs field. Like, it's almost as important as 1 + 1 = 2. Our existence depends on it. Like, how can it be any more important?
Although, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet that we'll ever know the answer to that in our lifetimes.
Not in our lifetime, but maybe in a few more generations. Hopefully, we'll find out. And I look forward to that. I'll be dead by then.
I look forward to that.
That well said. Well said, Tim. Great way to end this episode. I'll be dead by then. All right. So I want to thank everybody for joining us, and we'll see you all next week.